Welcome, and thank you all for standing by. All participants will be on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. At that time, you can press star one to ask a question from the phone lines. I'd also like to inform parties that the call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And I'd now like to turn the call over to Mr. Brady Phillips. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you, Sarah. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, which is part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to help support informed decision-making. Again, my name is Brady Phillips, a public affairs officer with NOAA's Office of Communications in Washington, D.C., and I'll be facilitating the call today. And during the call, we will have two short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. And again, a copy of the presentation that we'll be going through today can be found online at www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BRIEFINGS. Our first presenter today is Dee Garnt. He's the chief of the Climate Monitoring Branch at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information in Asheville, North Carolina. We'll provide a summary of the May U.S. and global climate reports. And our final presenter will be Brad Pugh, a meteorologist and seasonal forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center Operational Prediction Branch in College Park, Maryland, who will provide a La Nina update as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks over the coming 3 months. We'll begin with Deke from NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information. Deke.
Thank you, Brady, and thank you to those on the call for sharing your time and talent with us today. We will jump directly into the slides, beginning with slide number two. May 2016 was the warmest May on record at 0.87 degrees Celsius above the 20th century average for May. That is a very large value, the largest in the record for May. It is slightly off from the kind of unprecedentedly large global temperature departures from normal that we've seen in the last 5 to 7 months. Nevertheless, it is the warmest May on record, surpassing May of 2015. The record was set previously. This warmth was driven largely by the oceans, as it has been for much of the last 2 years. It was the warmest May on record for the global ocean surface, and again, like the global temperature, while record for May and while still a very large anomaly, it was smaller than what we've seen in recent months. So for much of the last year, we've seen very large anomalies both in the ocean and for the land and ocean combined. We still have large anomalies. We still are very warm. We're not quite as warm as we were 4 or 5 months ago. A lot of that has to do with the kind of demise of the El Nino phenomenon in the Pacific. The ocean temperature or the ocean temperature and the global temperature tend to be tied somewhat to the El Nino conditions, the ENSO conditions. And so as the El Nino fades, the global temperature and the global ocean temperature tend to fade with it with a lag of a few months. So we will see the lingering effects of the recently faded El Nino probably for the next couple of months. On the map, it shows where the heat was focused. Each one of these boxes shows how that particular part of the world related to its own history. The darkest red shows areas that were record warm. The Indian Ocean for many months now has been very warm. The southwestern Pacific Ocean off the coast of Australia and New Zealand, also quite warm. Some lingering warmth in the central Pacific, some warmth in the northern Atlantic and southern Atlantic, and then these two persistent colder-than-average features just southeast of Greenland and just off the tip of Tierra del Fuego in South America. Those have been there for quite a number of months as well. Moving on to slide number three. This is how the global temperature year-to-date looks. So not only May was warmest on record, the Northern Hemisphere spring season, March, April, and May, was the warmest on record. And the year-to-date, January, February, March, April, and May, is the warmest on record. this shows kind of as we go five laps into a 12-lap race, so to speak, where this year stands compared to the seven previous warmest years on record. You can see that it is kind of head and shoulders above even 2015, which was easily the warmest year on record so far. But you can also see that it is coming a little bit off of the peak warmth that we saw in the first few months of the year. As we go forward, it will be interesting to see, for those who are interested in whether 2016 will be the warmest year on record, just how much the global temperature fades in coming months with the demise of the El Nino, and if that is accelerated by the onset of a La Nina, which Brad may speak to later. So, again, a quarter of a degree Celsius above the previous warmest period on record, that's a big number when it comes to global temperature. That is, that doesn't sound like a lot. It wouldn't mean a lot if you set your room a quarter of a degree Celsius higher. But when you talk about the planetary system and all the life that depends on temperatures, that's quite a big departure. Moving on to slide number four. This is a graphic that just shows how far we've come in the last 3 years. This warm run that we've seen up through this last month started pretty much in very late 2013. November 2013 was the first really warm month that we had seen in a while at the time. So the table on the left is as of November 2013, what were the 10 warmest months on record? And you can see that November 13 dropped in there in a tie for fourth. It had a temperature departure or anomaly of 0.82 degrees Celsius, which is about a degree and a half Fahrenheit. And then if you move to the table on the right, the blue table is as of today. So basically all but one of the members of the top 10 as of November 2013 have been scrubbed from the list. They've been replaced by values from the last year, year and a half. And the numbers are starkly larger than what we saw in the previous table. So May of 2016 fits just below this table on the right. It's the first month in a long time not to take its place immediately in the top 10. But we've included this table just to show kind of how far we've come. We're in a new neighborhood now as far as global temperature. We've left the kind of previous decade behind, it seems. Focusing in on the United States, spring overall was, this is slide five, spring overall was quite warm and pretty wet. As is the case with any spring precipitation, there were dry pockets and wet pockets throughout the country. Wetness was particularly evident in the Central Plains and the Southern Plains and the Gulf Coast area. We saw several episodes of catastrophic flooding in the state of Texas, both in the early spring and in the end of May, leading into June. We saw dryness in the eastern part of the country, particularly the northeast and the southeast. And in the southeast, where it was fairly dry and also very warm, we saw the emergence of drought throughout the spring. So that was an emergent climate issue for the United States to keep an eye on, is the emergence of drought in the southeast, and in particular the southern Appalachians, where we are today in Asheville. Looking at the left map, the temperature map, these show the ranks of the spring temperatures versus each state's history. A 122 would mean it was the warmest spring of the 122 on record. The darker orange values show states that were in their top 10% of springs. So warmth throughout the United States, but particularly along the Canadian border, west of the Great Lakes, and along the Atlantic coast, we saw states that were relatively even more warm than the rest of the country. The warmth was most focused in the morning and in the Pacific Northwest. So regionally, the Pacific Northwest kind of outpaced the rest of the country, and so did Alaska, which we'll talk in the next slide. But as far as time of day, the warmth that we saw in the morning hours, relatively speaking, was more unusual than the warmth that we saw in the afternoon hours. So the spring warmth was driven mainly by overnight temperatures, which is consistent with what we've seen fairly consistently in the last 15 years or so. The next slide speaks to an Alaskan spring that was the warmest on record. It was also the first Alaskan spring to have a statewide average temperature of 32 degrees. The freezing or melting point of water, obviously it wasn't 32 degrees across the state, but it's a pretty symbolically important threshold. For the spring itself, temperatures were very much above average throughout the state, but particularly closer to the Bering Sea and the Aleutian areas of Alaska. This is the easily the warmest spring on record, as evidenced by the graphic on the right, which shows the history of Alaskan springtime temperatures since 1925. Big warmth there. There are issues with snowpack in the southern parts of the state where the vast majority of the population is. They continue to deal with profound change both in the long term and intensely this spring. Another one of our emerging climate issues is the situation in Alaska. My last slide is the drought monitor for June 14th. This was released this morning. So this is the latest update of the drought monitor. We see generally a shrinking of drought over the last few months across the United States. The improvements have been most evident in the West, where the northern half of the Western drought has improved substantially, particularly in the Great Basin, Utah, Nevada, and the Northern California area. We either saw drought disappear or we saw drought situation improve quite a bit. The drought did intensify, as you can see, in the southeast, particularly the southern Appalachians, where short-term warmth and dryness has really driven drought. And that is the update of the climate situation in the United States. And with that, I'll hand it over to our colleague Brad Pugh at the Climate Prediction Center.
All right. Thank you, Deke. We're on slide 8 now. And this details the sea surface temperatures and the state of ENSO. In the upper left-hand corner, we have the average SST anomalies for the time period May 15th through June 11th. And the thing to note here is the development of below-normal sea surface temperatures across the equatorial Pacific, east of the dateline towards the South American coast. As we transition out of El Nino, we're currently in ENSO neutral conditions, but the models in the current state of the SSTs certainly point towards a strong likelihood of La Nina developing during the next few months. Other anomalous SSTs include above normal sea surface temperatures along the west coast, and also the tropical Atlantic, some small positive anomalies through the Atlantic Basin and Caribbean region. The lower right-hand corner is the CPC IRI probabilistic ENSO forecast for three-month periods going out to JFM 2017. See in the first bar graph here, we have neutral conditions by JJA, June, July, August, probabilities for La Nina increase up towards 50%. And then by the late summer and fall, you can see the likelihood of La Nina increasing up towards 70%. And those enhanced odds for La Nina persist through the winter, so the probabilities all the way through JFM and JFM of 2017 remaining above 70%. All right, the next slide, which will be slide 9, is the monthly forecast for July. Temperature on the left, precipitation on the right. During July, there's enhanced odds for above normal temperatures throughout much of the lower 48 and Alaska. The highest probabilities for above normal temperatures exist across the southwest U.S. and also the Aleutians, southern Alaska, and the Alaska Panhandle. There is a weakness in the probabilities from Texas north towards eastern Nebraska, where we have equal chances of below, near, or above normal temperatures. And that equal chances area is related to the high soil moisture conditions that we currently have. In terms of July precip, a difficult month to forecast precip. Also, we're transitioning from El Nino to La Nina, and much of the precip is convective in nature. So that makes for a challenging precip forecast during July. But we are going with increased chances for below median precip over the northwest U.S. and above median precip for parts of the Gulf Coast, southern Florida, and parts of Alaska as well. All right, the next slide, slide 10, is CPC seasonal temperature and precipitation forecast for July through September. Very similar themes to the monthly forecast. You can see temperatures on the left here. We have the highest odds for above normal temperatures across southern Alaska, the Aleutians, and Alaska Panhandle. That's associated with somewhat with the above normal SSTs near the coastal regions. And across the U.S., you can see relatively high probabilities for above normal temperatures across the western U.S., also the northeast and southeast. And similar to the monthly temperature outlook, our lowest probabilities for above normal temperatures exist across the Great Plains. And once again, that's somewhat related to the high soil moisture conditions we have, especially from Nebraska south through Texas. The precip seasonal forecast, our strongest signal among the models and also the trends recently indicates favored area for below median precipitation over the northwestern U.S. According to our seasonal models, have above median precip favored for parts of the north central plains, upper Midwest, and a slight tilt in the odds exists for above median precip along the Gulf Coast and Florida, and also increased chances for above median precip is forecast over western Alaska and the Aleutians. All right, the final slide from CPC, slide 11, the U.S. Drought outlook, forecasting development across the northwestern U.S. with the relatively warm temperatures and that increased chances for below median precip. Persistence is likely across California as it's a dry time of year through September. Improvement is forecast over the southwest U.S. related to monsoon rainfall, although we don't have a very strong signal among our precip models during the monsoon season. Climatology by itself would argue for improvement across parts of Arizona and New Mexico. Elsewhere, expecting persistence over the Tennessee Valley, southern Appalachians. Difficult forecast there. The short term looks fairly warm and dry, but they could have improvement later in the summer. And one important note here, flash drought is not captured in this seasonal outlook. So although no development is forecast over the Corn Belt, that's not to say that flash drought, short-term drought, could develop over parts of the Plains and Corn Belt during the next 3 months. So that's all I have on the seasonal outlook, so I'll hand it back to Brady.
Thanks, Brad. We'll now take specific questions from the call participants. Again, please be sure to indicate who you'd like to answer the question, if possible. So today we have two people, so if you can, if not, they'll decide who can best answer it. So, operator, can you please remind the participants how they can ask a question and queue up the first call? Thanks.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to unmute your phone and record your name. Once again, it is star 1 to ask a question. Our first question comes from Seth Borenstein of Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you for doing this, and welcome back, Deke. It's been a while since we've had you on the here, so I have not one or two, but three questions for you. First, the obligatory, the cause of the record heat. We just have to ask this every time because we have to put it every time. Second, is this likely the last record month, you think, given the forecast and the lag time, or do you think we have another month or two of records? And finally, the likelihood, given how much, you know, that near quarter degree Celsius gap between 2016 and 2015, have you calculated how likely it is that 2016 will break 2015 records?
Hey, Seth, this is Deke. it's good to hear your voice again. I think I have all of these. So the driver, as has been, is the combination of the long-term change that we're seeing in the last half century or so, and kind of accelerated or a temporary spike due to a very strong El Nino that emerged over the last year and a half. Again, the analogy is like riding on an escalator. As you stand on the escalator and you go up, that represents the change from the long-term climate change driven by greenhouse gases. And as you jump up and down while you're on the escalator, that represents the influence of kind of transient seasonal things like El Nino and La Nina. So we are the combination of having been on the escalator for quite a while and having jumped pretty high with this El Nino has pushed us to new heights. The likelihood that this is the last of the 13 straight warmest months, will we see a 14th? June of 2015 is the warmest June on record. It is not as, it is not in the huge amounts that we've seen, particularly in the table. The lingering effect of El Nino, that big patch of warm water releases a lot of warmth into the atmosphere, and we see the lingering effects for quite a while. I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't say it is likely. But it's certainly a possibility that the warmth that we see in the atmosphere, and particularly the ocean warmth away from the El Nino regions, the Indian Ocean, the Southwest Pacific, and then they're profoundly warm and have been for quite a while, and the oceans have a longer memory of heat. They basically retain heat. They heat and cool a lot more slowly than the atmosphere, so I wouldn't rule it out. It is still a possibility. And I think your last question was about the likelihood of the calendar year being warm. I think the same concept from the previous question, the oceans are very warm, and we have a big lead after five laps. 2016 is a long, long way ahead of the pack and even pretty far ahead of even the other years, the warmest year, 2015. I think that the combination of the huge lead that we've built up in 5 months and the fact that the oceans have been driving the heat and the oceans tend to cool more slowly makes it, I would not be surprised at all if 2016 ended up at least nominally as the warmest year on record.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Brian Sullivan of Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Thank you. So I'm going to shift away from that and go into the dryness in the U.S. You had mentioned the possibility of a drought extending down into the Corn Belt. How confident are you that that might happen? And The other question for either one of you is, how does soil moisture drive the heat in the United States?
Hi, Brian. This is Brad. I guess I'll go ahead and take that question, and
sure.
Deke can add on if he wants to. For the seasonal drought outlook, we're not expecting drought to be present over the Corn Belt at the end of September, but it's certainly possible during the next couple of months. If we have any time period of below median precip for 2 to 3 weeks, coupled with above normal temperatures, and also anywhere where there's low soil moisture, those three factors could combine to cause a flash drought, a quickly developing drought. But right now, there's no strong signal that there would be a drought extending all the way through the end of September.
Wasn't there a flash drought a few years ago? I mean, that came on pretty quick, too, didn't it?
Yes, that's correct. Yep. Yeah, it's not uncommon to have flash droughts over the Plain States and Corn Belt during the summer months. And your next question was about the relationship between soil moisture and temperature?
Yes.
It does have a fairly strong relationship during the warm season across the Plain States and the Midwest. So where you would have high soil moisture, you would expect that to have some cooling effect on the temperatures, and the opposite of that's true. So that's...
How does that work?
One of the contributing factors to the equal chances of below, near, or above mm-hmm. Forecasts for the Plain States.
Can Brad, can you just give a quick explanation as to why increased soil moisture leads to cooler temperatures, the evaporation?
Yeah. Sorry about if you have higher topsoil moisture, you would have lower evaporation rates. That would tend to cool the lower levels of the atmosphere.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Curtis Alexander with San Francisco Chronicle. Your line is open.
Good morning, gentlemen. I think this is probably a question directed toward Brad. Brad, you had mentioned that the waters off the coast, off the west coast of North America, were above average, I think. And I was wondering what was driving that and what the implications of that may be on weather and if that's at all similar to some of the warm water we saw off the West Coast over the past year or so here in California.
Yeah, so that feature, the warmer than normal SSTs along the West Coast, yeah, that's been a very persistent feature, and that's typically associated with El Nino. We would expect if we have a typical response from La Nina, for those SSTs to reverse themselves and begin to cool and perhaps even go below average by next winter. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it does. We had some there were a lot of changes driven by that warm water, and I guess with the cooling, we probably won't see some of the things we observed over the past year or so.
Yeah, I mean, we would expect, I mean, if we get the typical response from La Nina, we'd have more upwelling along the West Coast, which would contribute to a cooling effect on the SSTs there.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Once again, as a reminder, it is star one to ask a question. Our next question comes from Andrea Thompson with Climate Central. Your line is open.
Hi, yes. I think this would be for Deke. So you showed that temperature, the chart comparing, you know, the top 10 warmest months back in November 2013 and then currently. So how long do you think, you know, it might be until we see a turnover in that again? How long might we stay the top 10 months, especially with the La Nina possibly in the offense?
Hi, Andrea. You know, we tend to give El Nino and La Nina their due credit for kind of modulating the year-to-year changes or the month-to-month kind of extremeness that we see, and there's a good reason for that. They are very influential. So as the El Nino fades, and particularly if a La Nina kind of takes root as is favored later this year, you know, one of the things that will do to global temperatures most likely, or I should couch this and say, you know, historically what that has done has kind of pulled the global temperature down a little cooler than the trend. If that were the case, if the La Nina were strong, it would be even more so the case that we would probably not threaten the top 10 list as often as we have during this run of El Nino. And I wouldn't rule out any individual month from making a charge at it. You know, we still have weather patterns and other patterns besides El Nino that can make things happen from month to month. But I think as this El Nino fades away for the next couple of years anyway, until we get another big El Nino or until we get several more years of warming racked up, we probably won't make monthly charges at that list.
Great, thanks.
Next question comes from Patricia Kitchen with Newsday. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. Thank you. Thanks so much for doing this. This question is for Brad. I wanted to ask about the leanings towards above normal temperatures for July and also July, August, September, especially focused on the Northeast. Could you just talk a little bit about some of the factors that are behind that, you know, this call for above normal?
Yes, there's a couple of factors related to the enhanced odds for above normal temperatures across the Northeast. First, our dynamical model guidance strongly supports above normal temperatures there, both for the monthly and seasonal outlooks.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the seasonal outlook, a secondary reason for that forecast for the trends for the climate signal over the past decade or so.
Over the past decade or so. And what climate signal would that be? I mean, what does that mean exactly? Is that just...
The warming trend we've seen.
Oh, the warming. Okay, right. Warming trend. Okay. Okay. So it would be both, you know, the model guidance and also the just fact that things seem to be trending.
Yeah, that's
that
correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
Our next question comes from Seth Bornstein of Associated Press. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks again. In terms of, Deke, you talked about Alaska. Greenland, I know this is in June, has been hitting, you know, mid-70s the last few days. What are we seeing in terms of the overall Arctic, and given the switch from, you know, will that change much with the switch from El Nino to La Nina, especially, you know, since, you know, it seems like, you know, the ENSOs aren't as predominant driver in Europe and elsewhere.
Hi, Seth. Thanks. The big picture, kind of long-term background to that question is that the Arctic is warming faster than any large region on the planet in the long term. It's seeing warming rates as much as double the rest of the planet. That has a lot to do, like you said, with many factors unrelated to the ENSO phenomenon. And so we see change in the Arctic, Alaska, subarctic Alaska, Greenland, Siberia, as kind of a crucible of warming. compared to the rest of the planet. We typically see when you get that far north, when you get that close to the poles, the weather patterns over the course of a month often play out in a very warm region a few hundred or a few thousand miles away from a very cold region. You just see these waves kind of set up over the course of months. So in any individual month, it would be pretty common to see a big red blob, you know, a third of a continent away from a big blue blob. So in any individual month, we see strong weather patterns. When we talk about warming in the Arctic, we typically talk about kind of long-term, on average, the intensely warm periods kind of outpace the colder outbreaks. And we've seen that in spades in Alaska for much of the last year. We did see that over Greenland in recent weeks. We saw that in parts of western Russia, Siberia as well, this past month. So as we continue to warm, like you said, it's fairly independent of El Niño, La Niña outcomes. It is very related to some other patterns that we see related to the polar kind of pressure patterns and weather patterns that we see, which regions will have a really warm month or a really cold month. But overall, warming in those high latitude areas is expected to continue to outpace the rest of the planet over the long term.
Okay, and if we go back to that chart you have on page 4, when you did the 10 warmest departures, instead of just the top 10, do you have like the top 25, the top 50 or whatever?
Yes, we can provide that to you.
Can you? Oh, that would be great.
Okay.
And one last one, I guess, is in the chart before, in number 3, page 3. Looking at that, it looks like, is it fair to say we have to go back to mid 2014 before we're not at a year to date where we're hottest ever? Even, you know, I know 2014 ended up the hottest year on record, but I don't think it stayed, you know, it wasn't like last year where it was, you know, from gate to finish warmest on record. Has it been almost 2 years, you say, that we've been year to date hottest on record, or is that just too confusing a question?
No, I get what you're saying. Yes, what you're seeing is what the way you're interpreting it is what you're seeing. When the green line representing 2014 pokes up above the purple line representing 2010, that's when 2014 became the warmest year to date on record, and it never gave that title up throughout the remainder of 2014. And then it was blown away by 2015, and then that has been blown away so far by 2016. So you're looking at about, I don't know, 18, 20 months in a row. To be fair, the closeness of the green and the purple trace, I would use the word nominally warmest year-to-date on record for 2014. It was very statistically close to 2010. But, yes, that's you interpreted it exactly how I would.
And again, compared to the last El Nino year, what are we, about 3/4 of a degree? I'm trying to remember how much warmer we are than 97, 98 on average, the last El Nino.
I don't want to do math in my head on the phone. I'll get back with you. I will point out that 2009, 2010 was also an El Nino year. It wasn't as dramatic or as profound as the 97-98, but we've had several smaller events between 97-98 and this most recent one.
Yeah, oh, I know, but I know you had a chart once comparing 97-98
okay. Yep.
To recent ones. So, all right, thanks.
Again, as a reminder, it is star 1 to ask a question. Our next question comes from Steve Tracton. Your line is open.
Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
This is kind of a science question, not so much to do with the forecast. The warming above and below the trend of global warming, so to speak, is attributed to the warm waters associated with El Nino in the Central Pacific. Now, the warming doesn't occur directly, it's indirect, primarily through evaporation from the ocean. And when condensation occurs, either through convection locally or transport of moisture into mid-latitude weather systems, that's the mechanism by which the atmosphere heats. So it would lead me to asking a question. If that's the case, that is, the transfer of heat from the ocean primarily occurs through condensation, to attribute that to El Nino alone, wouldn't one have to determine whether or not the global precipitation is greater in El Nino years than non-El Nino years? And if that is the case, do you know of any studies that have looked at that?
Hi there. This is Deke. I appreciate your question. The atmosphere in general is warmed from below. So even over land, it is the sun striking the earth and the earth warming the atmosphere from below, both from convection like you described, but also from conduction, just contact with a warm surface. So the role that El Nino plays in helping push the global temperature up above trend, and it is not the only thing that pushes global temperature up above trend, but it is a big one. The role that it plays is due both to the very large footprint of warmer than normal surface waters in the Pacific. Like you said, that is released to the atmosphere through convection, so through kind of giving up the heat to the atmosphere and then realizing that heat when cloud droplets form higher in the atmosphere, but also just the much simpler method of the fact that the bottom part of the atmosphere touches a big patch of really warm water. Those both have an influence on the global temperature patterns. And there have been several studies looking at global temperature or global precipitation patterns related to ENSO. Our colleagues at the Climate Prediction Center, if I can brag on Brad's colleagues, they have done some real groundbreaking research on how these things play out regionally, what it means for different parts of the world. As far as global average precipitation, that is a measured much differently over the oceans and over the land, and it remains a really active area of research to try to bring those two different types of observation sets together in a climatologically robust way. There are really smart people working on it, and there is research that comes out, but that's a kind of a continued opportunity for science to improve.
But is the basis of my question valid then, that one would have to demonstrate that one has those measurements, but the global precip during El Nino years should be greater than that during non-El Nino years?
It has really consequential impact on tropical precipitation, which drives the global average. I think the premise of your question is correct, with the caveat that the conduction piece, the touching of the atmosphere to a very warm and very large warm surface, is also a pretty profound factor as well.
But the bottom air to the bottom level, low-level air temperature can't be all that much different from the sea surface temperature. So to me implies that direct connection, conduction, would be relatively small. Am I mistaken in that?
Well, the ocean temperature, you're correct that the temperatures are the same. The ocean temperature is largely driving over the long term the atmospheric temperature because of that connection.
Okay, thanks for
your. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Herman Zurita with NextEra Energy. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thank you for holding the call. My question is on slide 9, the probabilistic forecast for July. I'm wondering if there are any resources that could kind of describe in some detail the probabilistic methodology that you have. And secondly, are there probabilistic forecasts available on a city or maybe a smaller geographic region?
Yes, this is Brad from CPC. Yeah, we do have that available on the CPC webpage. So I don't know if you have my email address, but we could communicate offline and I could get that information to you.
Perfect. Thank you.
This is, I think that's our last question for the day. And again, if anybody has further up questions or need follow up stuff, you can feel free to email me and I can connect you with either Deke or Brad. So once again, my name is Brady and my email is brady.philips@noaa.gov. And I'll conclude by just giving you a couple of reminders of some upcoming releases. So the June U.S. Climate Highlights will be released on July 7th, and the June Global Climate Highlights will be released on July 19th. So right now, our next scheduled monthly climate call will be Thursday, July 21st at 11 o'clock a.m. And for those following the hurricane season, the next update to the Atlantic hurricane season outlook will be August 11th. So as of right now, this concludes the call. And again, if you do have further follow-up or need additional information, please feel free to email me at brady.philips@noaa.gov. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. That does conclude today's call. Thank you all for participating. You may disconnect your lines at this time.